I had those questions. I thought, well, am I qualified to start a company? And then one of my good friends took me out for drinks one evening, and she was sort of like, Claire, like, there are people starting companies who, you know, don't have any of the same credentials or experience that you have, and you have this deep passion. Like, you, even though you know you want to be an entrepreneur, if you're asking yourself if you're ready, like, you just have to make the leap.
Hello and welcome back to the Arena Podcast by Kauffman Fellows, where we dive deep into the stories of some of the most fabled names in VC. I'm your producer, Nihar Nilakanti, and this podcast is hosted by Jeff Harbach, CEO of Kauffman Fellows. Joining us in today's episode is Claire Tompkins, CEO of Future Family and a fellow from Class 15. We can't wait to share her story with you, so let's get right to it.
All right, welcome back to the Kauffman Fellows podcast. Today we are thrilled to have Claire Tompkins with us. Claire is the founder and CEO of Future Family, a startup helping women and couples start and expand their families using IVF and egg freezing. Future Family is the first company to offer monthly subscriptions for fertility services that combine financing and concierge care into one easy plan. Previously, Claire was director of product marketing at SolarCity, now Tesla, one of the largest consumer finance businesses in the industry. Prior to her role at SolarCity, she was on the founding team of two global nonprofits. She holds an MS and PhD from Stanford University in Management Science and Engineering, and has been recognized as a National Science Foundation Fellow and a Kauffman Fellow from Class 15. Claire is passionate about women's health and fertility based on her personal journey. She has three children, all born IVF, and lives in San Francisco. Claire, thanks so much for joining us. So glad to have you here.
Jeff, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Yours is an awesome story, certainly one, you know, when we think about entrepreneurs starting companies based on personal experience and something that they're very passionate about, yours is right down the pipe with that one. Why don't you tell us about the Future Family and how that came to be?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I was, as you shared in my bio, in my sort of early 30s, running product marketing for SolarCity. I was part of the team there. When the company was still privately held, and then, you know, went public in December of 2012, and then helped scale up the company. And during that time, I was also trying to start a family. And for me, that journey was, you know, using IVF. And, you know, I have to say, like, it was a really tough experience. And I think, you know, partly being very like goal driven and type A, I sort of, once I was ready to have kids, I really wanted to have kids, and I didn't anticipate what a long journey it would be. It took a couple of years, multiple cycles of IVF, and along the way, unfortunately, a few losses. And so, you know, really, once I was pregnant, Natalie, who's now 4 years old, it was such an impact on my life. It was probably the, you know, one of the more difficult things I went through emotionally, that it really made me step back and think, like, wow, like, how do we fix this? We're in the heart of Silicon Valley. This seems like a really important thing for so many individuals. And yet, are we leveraging tech and smart solutions to help more people do this?
One of your quotes that I love is, "My company, Future Family, is 100% personal for me. I experienced the stress of going through a difficult fertility journey when trying to conceive my daughter, Natalie. I know firsthand the emotional and financial toll it takes on women and couples who deal with fertility struggles, and I find it unacceptable such an important part of life is still unsupported for so many of us. Going through this journey with all its ups and downs motivated me to help solve this problem for other women and couples." Tell us how Future Family is now actually helping solve that problem.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a big motivator. It is the idea that we can actually help more people, you know, start families, navigate. I mean, something that is really seared into my brain or my memory was the first time one of our clients sent us a baby photo. And it's just this idea that, you know, that we actually have been able to help people start families. So I think that's very much the true north for me and for the company. And, you know, we started, obviously, I left Solar City SC in 2016. And like everyone, you know, sort of idea on a napkin, meeting in a coffee shop, talking to our then finance advisor, now CFO, who has his own story. And, you know, we started putting together the two critical parts of the solution, which was this idea of concierge or fertility coaching. So we have these amazing fertility coaches, the top nurses in the US in fertility, who come onto our platform to coach our clients through this personal journey. You know, when I went through it, it was very isolating. It was very challenging. It was a lot of emotional ups and downs and a lot of questions. So we provide coaches for all of our clients. And then we also have dealt with the really, you know, tough piece around the financing side. And that was a big focus of the company last year. We put together a bunch of capital, our Series A round, but also the first dedicated fertility fund for $100 million to help people who want to start families do it in like a stress-free environment. Instead of paying all that cost up front, you can pay monthly. And we see that's making a huge impact. People are not having to delay when they get going. People are actually able to affordably approach IVF. That's been a big goal of ours. And we have, you know, tens of thousands of people using our platform today.
You've now at Future Family raised a sizable A round with some Coffin Fellows participating and being some early supporters. What do you see as the future? What's the future look like for Future Family? Future Family, when Future Family is successful, what are the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years look like, and how your product and your service will impact lives?
Yeah, well, I think one of the biggest shifts in the last 3 years has been the shift in kind of awareness on this topic and the conversations we're having. So I remember the early days telling people, you know, I'm starting a fertility company. And a lot of the investor questions were, well, how big is this market really? And like, what is this market today in the US? And, you know, sort of having to explain really at that point, like, look, it's a $4 to $5 billion annual market in the US. As you know, Jeff, like to a lot of investors, that might sound like not actually a huge number. But you're explaining, like, look at the trends here. Look at what's really going on underneath the surface. And that what's really going on is this massive demographic shift. I was on the forefront of that personally. I felt like I didn't have many people to talk to. I was 32 and I was trying to get pregnant. But that is now the new normal. The average age of women having babies in the U.S. as of 2016 was above 30. That's in and of itself is a massive demographic shift. And then, you know, we're also becoming a more, you know, progressive and inclusive society. And there are all sorts of reasons why you might want IVF. Maybe you're in a same-sex relationship. Maybe you are having a second family. Maybe you're an amazing woman who wants to navigate this journey solo. And we're helping all those different types of families get started. So I think for us, it's, you know, when we look at the future, it's like, IVF is going to be a very normal way to start your family. I've been very open about my journey and my three, you know, adorable, for the most part, kids who were born with IVF. And I think that this is going to be such an important piece of how we start families in the future. You know, it's worth also noting that when you look outside the US, where people have had countries that have had more of a discourse around the topic about starting families and how to do it, and have made it more accessible largely through things like national healthcare programs, but certainly addressing the cost piece that we work so hard on at Future Family, you know, you see much higher adoption rates. Almost 10% of live births in Denmark are IVF. In the US, we're still below 2%. So, you know, I think now, thankfully, I don't have to spend very much time educating investors on, you know, is this going to be a big market, because the awareness is there. But certainly how we scale this market and the solutions we provide for consumers and for families is going to be continue to be our focus.
One of the things that I love that you said is the best moments of my day are when we get emails and texts from clients who we help start a family. There is nothing better than that. And you referenced how you still remember the first family that you helped get started. What was it that gave you this entrepreneurial bug? I mean, you were product marketing at Solar City. You've been on the operating side of the business. Was it seeking deeper purpose? What was it that kind of gave you the entrepreneurial bug and said, okay, I see this problem, I've lived this problem, but I actually want to take it to the next step and actually start a company that helps solve this problem?
Yeah, I mean, it was a couple things. It was, I think I always imagined at some point starting a company. And I, for a long time, just assumed that that might be in the clean energy space, since I spent almost a decade in solar and clean energy. And this experience left such a deep impact that it ended up becoming the company that I wanted to start. Obviously, I couldn't have possibly told you that, 5 years prior to founding Future Family. I wouldn't have been able to say I'm going to switch into healthcare and I'm going to work on fertility. So it was really something that left a deep mark. I went into that kind of very dark place, and I like talking to all of our clients, but I really do get that feeling. And there are moments that can still be hard, where I went into that place where I thought, maybe it's not going to work for me. Maybe I'm not going to have a family, or I am going to have a family, but I think my pathway might be very different than what I imagined. Maybe it's going to have to be adoption, which I was personally very open to, but it's still a hard thing to grapple with. And it was difficult in my relationship. So I think, that piece, it left such a big mark that when I thought about what company I wanted to start or wanted to work on, this problem is so personal. And then I think I went through all the things that are very normal in retrospect, but at the time felt high stakes. I had those questions. I thought, well, am I qualified to start a company? And then one of my good friends took me out for drinks one evening, and she was sort of like, Claire, like, there are people starting companies who, don't have any of the same credentials or experience that you have, and you have this deep passion. Like, you, even though you want to be an entrepreneur, if you're asking yourself if you're ready, like, you just have to make the leap. And so I thought that was a great also moment. Was, you actually do end up having a lot of self-doubt. And it actually took a friend to sort of objectively say, like, wait, like, for better or worse, like, there's a ton of 20-something men starting companies, and you've got a depth of experience and multiple degrees, and, you can do this. And so I'm obviously thankful that someone kind of gave me the little pep talk, or like sort of kick in the ass that I needed. My husband's been hugely supportive. And now that I'm on this journey, like, I literally couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Amazing. You said that you always imagined starting a company. Did you, had there been any starts and stops before this, or were you just kind of waiting and looking for the right thing? And then this clearly became the company that you wanted to start, or were there any that you tried to start before? Because in your mind, you said, I always imagined myself starting a company.
Yeah, I mean, there were sort of entrepreneurial endeavors all along the way. I mean, I was involved in, founding a couple of, on the founding team of a couple of nonprofits. So it was not in the for-profit space, but it was still, in essence, very entrepreneurial. Actually, that experience ended up being very relevant to a lot of what we're doing at Future Family. I mean, less on the, obviously, fundraising VC venture-backed side, but more about how to build a team, how to take a concept from zero to nothing, or from nothing to something, how to create kind of a brand or a presence in the world. So I had those sort of entrepreneurial experiences early on. Then I got to kind of see and work with the founders at SC up close. And then I did, think about doing, we sort of had this whole distributed energy model that I thought we could build and start. But literally, when it came down to like following my passion, even though clearly I didn't have a healthcare background, this ended up trumping all the other ideas.
What I love about your story is there's so many, entrepreneurship has become so popularized by the success stories that we see, that many people say, I want to do a normal job. I want to start a company. And that's they say things similar to what you did, which is, I always imagine myself starting a company, and they figure out that I'm just going to start a company no matter what it is. What you've done is you've gained experience. You always knew that you had that in you. And then when all the things kind of came together and said, okay, now not only do I know that I want to start a company, but I know what to start it in and what I'm passionate about and the problem that I think the world needs to have solved, and that I'm the unique person to solve it. Still, you get to that gate and you recognize in yourself that, gosh, I have a lot of self-doubt. Like, can I really be the person to do this? And what I love about that story, Claire, is that Everybody feels that self-doubt. Every one of us goes through that feeling. How did you get yourself through? I mean, you said you got the pep talk from this very good friend, and thankfully, hopefully we all have friends like that. They gave you the kick in the butt. But that's to sustain you through self-doubt, you needed probably more than that. How did you get yourself through the continuing kind of imposter syndrome, self-doubt that comes with being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination, right? So, I mean, I think one of the things that probably is a trait that's common amongst a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, you do have all those self-doubt moments and critical moments, but so to some degree, once you take that initial leap, which is actually the hardest thing, the hardest thing is to suddenly acknowledge, yep, I'm going to give up all the security and everything else and, you know, make that leap. And I mean, we live in the best place in the world, and it's a huge privilege to live here, to feel like people will not judge you if you make that leap and you are not successful. That is something that obviously, you know, I'm certainly grateful for all the time, but nonetheless, like making that initial leap is by far the hardest. And once you've made the leap, what happens is interesting. It's not that the self-doubt goes away, but you find, right, that you are very motivated around this idea of like personal, you know, sort of the personal grit. You're like, well, even if XYZ rejected my idea or fundraising was hard or whatever it is, you're like, damn it, I'm gonna prove them wrong. Like I'm gonna build this thing, and particularly if you're building something you really care about. So I think that's kind of what kicks in after you jump off the precipice, so to speak.
You've always been someone that impressed me and that I've admired in your grit, as you say. That's not something that you learned over just the last 2, 3, 4 years. That's something that came over a lifetime of experiences. I'd love to, let's kind of rewind the clock a little bit and talk about some of the formative experiences, maybe your childhood, your parents, the culture. Like, where did you find that, what has become that internal grit for you? What tell us about some of the formative experiences for Claire Tompkins.
Yeah, I sometimes reflect on like, why am I such a stubborn person? So, you know, I think, and I do actually also, Jeff, talk about this with my husband, where I say, oh my gosh, we've created this great life for our kids, but, you know, we're going to have to rip them out of this comfort zone at some point, because we want them to grow up with, you know, some sense, you know, I don't know if hardship is quite the right word, but right, some sense that not everything is, you know, California sunny skies and avocado toast. Like at some point they have to experience the real world. So we do definitely talk about this. I mean, and I also will add there that I had the pleasure of being at a dinner the other night with some other founders, and we were talking about our sharing our histories. And what struck me about the group was that everyone had something in the first 10, 12, 15 years of their life that in my mind kind of constituted some sort of like hardship or challenge. And the stories were all over the place, from people whose families had experienced bankruptcy to really hard financial situations to personal injury that they'd had to overcome or health issues. And I thought, well, it is interesting that maybe that has an impact in terms of, you know, perseverance and wanting to go forward. I feel like I had a great childhood, but I think it was interesting that I was an immigrant. You wouldn't know that now because I've lived here for several decades, of course, and don't really have an accent, and also came speaking the language because I immigrated from England. But I think there was a sense when I moved here of being different and not necessarily always being accepted. Moving into a small town in the Midwest with a very strong at that time British accent. And then I think also, you know, I grew up in a very rural area. So my day to day was like waking up at 6 a.m. in the freezing cold to do chores and look after animals. And my dad traveled a lot. So it was kind of this idea of being the oldest child and holding down the fort, so to speak. So, I mean, it's a mosaic of things, but I'm sure that some of the experiences along the way influenced it. And I think about it all the time with my kids, like, what are we going to do to toughen them up? What are we going to do to make sure that they're resilient?
You're to find a way to give them the same experience that you did, which was moving from your comfort zone and the land that you knew to a new land and having to be on a farm. That's incredible.
I keep telling my husband we need to get a farm, and he's just like a Manhattanite. He's like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. But so we'll see.
What were your parents like to where they wanted to take this leap? I mean, that must have been a big leap for them.
Yeah. So I think my dad is entrepreneurial. Moved to the US but I mean, also like a lot of Europeans, right, had lived in many different countries, South Africa, and spent a lot of time in Holland, and traveled certainly internationally, moved to the U.S., and ended up essentially sort of founding or taking over a company that he then led for many years and exited. And I think if you meet my parents, you certainly would say that my dad and I have a lot in common in terms of our personalities, and that maybe that also was an impact.
Now, you've done a lot of schooling, you've done a lot of learning, you've been kind of a lifelong learner. How has that impacted how you think about future family, how you think about your relationships? What kind of formative experiences came out of those college and master's years?
Yeah. So I think it was obviously a great opportunity to get to study and to study at Stanford and to have those years. I think it's interesting when I look back whether, you know, I would advise someone all the same steps in terms of doing a PhD, which is a long path. But again, being someone who's stubborn and I like to finish projects that I start, I wanted to go the whole distance. But, you know, met amazing people, obviously, you know, again, tested the limits of, you know, what was possible in terms of thinking about problems and big problems and how to solve them. I will say there's obviously a huge though difference between academia and, say startup life. And I think it ultimately turned out I learned I'm much more comfortable in startup life.
And I'm sure part of that learning comes with being comfortable or more comfortable with risks. And your life, you've taken, you've had an incredible childhood and background that has led you to this point. Can you tell us about some of the risks, or maybe one that sticks out to you, risk that you took, and maybe a risk that failed, that ultimately didn't happen, and what you learned from it? Any formative experiences there that you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for me, it was really a lot about fit. You know, one thing that I often hire for this now on my team and in previous teams that I've led is, you know, the ultimate eclectic career path. Like I was recently had to return to University of Arizona, which was my undergrad, my alma mater before coming to Stanford, and give one of the homecoming address or speech there. And when I was introduced, I remember thinking, wow, so interesting and so unfocused because it's sort of the litany of things I'd worked on. I mean, I literally, as you recounted, was at Stanford and did a PhD in a very technical finance-oriented field, then pushed out of that into really the philanthropy or nonprofit world, although it was connected through the mission around climate change and clean energy. Actually spent some time thinking whether I wanted to do VC for a while because I didn't know, in quotes, what company I wanted to start. Then went into a really large operating company, which was a formative experience. And now I think really part of the learning was like the eclectic journey. Not everyone's career path is completely linear. And actually it might even be an indicator that you are someone who wants to be an entrepreneur or start something. So I certainly look for that. I think those diversity of experiences, the challenge is obviously just being able to understand what you actually took from each experience and then tell a story around it. And I think that's for people who are on more eclectic journeys, something to focus on. But I also think it might be an indicator that you want to do something a little bit more out of the box. But certainly that's the thing that I think about is like that very eclectic journey. But all those pieces have contributed to ultimately finding completely the right thing for me, which is, you know, thankfully sooner rather than later to be running and leading a startup.
One of the things that you've said is more women need to start companies. Now is the golden moment. There's a broad realization that women are underrepresented. And there are huge markets that can be addressed by women who understand these markets. Women make incredible entrepreneurs, and I'm very excited to see women in their 20s and 30s jumping in. This is truly a golden moment for women and underrepresented minorities starting companies. What would you say to some of those women that are starting and failing? Because we know that a large percentage of startups fail. What would you tell them to say, hey, keep going? Or what advice would you give them?
The general Yeah, the general observation, right, is, I mean, golden age for women for sure, but even just for entrepreneurship generally, because there are so many problems that need solving. And so therefore, there's so many opportunities to start great companies. And it's so apparent to me that these massive markets that are controlled by female consumers, many of them are lacking in solutions, including women's health. And that just presents this massive, massive opportunity. And I think it's hard when there's not a realization on the capital market side that those are opportunities. But now clearly there is this shift. And I have lots of investors asking me, you know, can you introduce me to more female entrepreneurs? Who do you know? We want to back women. So again, like my general advice to women is really like take that leap, even if you have self-doubt, which women are more likely to have than men, like still take the risk, do it because people are looking for you, like someone to back. And then if you're an entrepreneur and maybe you're failing or having a hard time, I mean, it would depend obviously on the situation. Not every startup can work. So sometimes there is a moment to kind of call it quits or step back. But I think the great thing about Silicon Valley and other entrepreneurial places is, you know, people love second time entrepreneurs.
You keep on learning, you keep on growing. You don't let those setbacks become something that defines you, but rather something that educates you and helps you, gives you more experience. That's great. This is awesome, Claire. As you think about how Coffin Fellows played a role in your journey, tell me about what Coffin Fellows has meant to you or where that fits in the arc of your life and your career.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, you've heard me say this before, I think, to other groups of fellows, but Kaufman was integral. So, you know, I'm obviously not only a huge fan of the network, but I hope to find more ways to give back, because for me, like, it was that transition out of academia into ultimately finding what was a better fit for me personally. And Kaufman was that bridge where, you know, essentially the mentality was anything's possible. And for a lot of people, that obviously meant anything's possible meant, you know, take a bigger role at a venture capital firm or start your own fund. And lots of Kaufman fellows do that. And that is equally entrepreneurial and really impressive. But I guess it is. I mean, there's an entrepreneurial vibe to Kaufman, right? Not everyone's necessarily starting a company. Many are, but a lot are starting funds and firms, or at least they aspire to at some point. So it's a vibrant entrepreneurial community. And certainly it gave me the space and support and community to think about, yeah, I want to do something outside of the box. I don't want to work on this narrow PhD topic forever. What I want to do is something maybe big picture. And the Kaufman community supported that.
Thank you so much for that. So Claire, if you were to have the opportunity to go back and talk to the 15-year-old Claire or the 20-year-old Claire or even the 25-year-old Claire, which must have been just a couple of years ago, what would you say to that younger Claire? And what would you say to all the younger Claires or the younger Jeffs out there in the world that are thinking about this journey, thinking about academia, thinking about things that where they maybe want to start a company? Given your journey and your experiences, what would you say to those younger versions of us?
Yeah, well, I think about this, you know, obviously in the context of my own children and you know, young people, and even people who work for us. I think that my big hope here, or what the advice is, that society is shifting enough that being an entrepreneur can be a pathway that is much more accepted and normalized. I think it would have been amazing. I'm so glad I'm here now, but amazing if when I was younger, I really saw that as a career path and thought that was a viable thing even earlier, because, you know, I do think you type for these things pretty early on, breadth of interests, you know, strengths across multiple subjects, you know, things that I think would have been great to figure out earlier. And that's why I'm so excited to see a lot of 20-year-old women starting companies and jumping in, and want to see much more of that.
Awesome. Okay. Two rapid fire questions, and then, and then we'll end. So your favorite book that you're reading right now, or your any book advice that you give?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many great books. I'm probably like everyone, reading in between different events, but I think, you know, obviously the thriller of the last 12 months has been, you know, the Bad Blood book, which was hard to put down. But then, I mean, I think, you know, also, I know it's been a bestseller, but, you know, Michelle Obama went through an IVF journey, and not only is her biography inspiring, her autobiography, but that part of the journey certainly resonated with me when I read about her story.
Awesome. You're someone that values emotional health, physical health. What is your favorite exercise or workout or fill in the blank?
Carrying both of my twins up and down the stairs. I think it's now about 50 pounds of kid.
That's awesome. You got yourself a built-in like weight vest or kettlebells that you just walk up and down stairs constantly.
Yes, because they're at that age where if you pick one up, you have to pick the other up. And so I was literally saying, I don't think my upper body has ever been this toned.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right, and last question for you. If you had a genie in the bottle, one wish that you would be granted that would encompass anything that your heart desires, what would that one wish be?
Yeah, I mean, this is, in some ways, this is an easy one because it's thematic for this conversation. But, you know, I really do wish or, you know, hope that, you know, when Jeff, you and I are doing a retrospective in another sort of 20 years and our kids are all grown up, that we have made much more serious inroads to having the sort of diversity that we need to see to solve the challenges that we're facing. You know, not just obviously the gender balance, but other pieces of diversity too. I mean, that is the goal.
Amen. Claire, you are so incredible, and we were so grateful for you taking time in what I know is a very busy time for you with the company, with family, with everything that you have. Thank you so much for joining us and being with us on the Coffin Fellows podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey listeners, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Arena Podcast. As always, you can get notified of the latest release by subscribing to our newsletter found in the description of this episode or by visiting fellows.org. That's all for now. We'll catch you in the arena next week.